Hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a podcast where two friends ask each other all of life's least important questions, even if they don't get any answers. I am one half of this podcast, author, comedian, staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and an adult who thinks a stranger might have yelled at him and has been thinking about it for days, Daniel O'Brien. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hey, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I am a scribe, an ink slinger of sorts. Yeah, don't you hate it when people say scribe?
I do.
It fucking drives me nuts. I am a type of guy who's very chill in the room, but fearless on the page.
Oh, boy.
That's another thing I hate. There are like some writer cliches that I want to write them all down and say, all right, everyone, we're putting these in the fire from now on, and no one's allowed to use them.
Fearless on the page. Good Lord.
Yeah, I know.
Ugh. We're going to get into this show where we ask each other questions and whatnot. I wanted to bring up something because Soren was talking about me being famous at the end of last episode, which is, I want to be clear, not a thing that I think is true. I do not believe myself to be famous. I do not want to be famous. I think because we were doing very public jobs for 10 years on the internet, we are known to a specific group of people, but we are not famous. But I'm bringing this up because one of my coworkers found my page on a website that is called datingcelebs.com, which you can find if you go to datingcelebs.com/who-is-daniel-o'brien-dating. And it's a page that says, who is Daniel O'Brien dating now? And they have some of my information, but not a lot of it. And it's been very humbling because they've found several different ways to call me single. When I feel like you could just say, on the question of who is Daniel O'Brien dating now, you could say no one or I don't know. This fucking website has like six paragraphs.
This is impossible to use. I was so excited for this, but I'm in search and I'm searching by profession.
Okay.
It's not alphabetical. It goes pop singer, drummer, musical star, war hero, mm-hmm. explorer, family member.
Okay.
I sold this.
So I can just like give you the bullet points.
Yeah, please.
It starts off, Daniel O'Brien, American comedian, 34 years old, single. And then they list some other information about me. And then bold headline, who is Daniel O'Brien dating? Daniel O'Brien is currently single according to our records. Cool. And then another bold headline, relationship status. As of 2020, Daniel O'Brien is not dating anyone. Daniel is 34 years old. According to celebs couples, Daniel O'Brien had at least one relationship previously. He has not been previously engaged. Fact. Daniel O'Brien is turning 35 years old in a certain amount of days. Be sure to check out Top 10 Facts About Daniel O'Brien at Famous Details. Bold headline about Daniel O'Brien's girlfriend. Daniel O'Brien doesn't have a girlfriend right now. All dating histories are fact-checked and confirmed by our users. We use publicly available data and resources to ensure that our dating stats and biographies are accurate. Bold. Who has Daniel O'Brien dated? Like most celebrities, stupid. Daniel O'Brien tries to keep his personal and love life private, so check back often as we will continue to update this page with new dating news and rumors. Daniel O'Brien girlfriends. He had at least one relationship previously. Again!
Who do they think he dated?
And they again point out that I haven't been engaged. We are currently in process of looking up information on the previous data, dates, and hookups.
Oh, that's incredible, Dan. I love that moment at the very beginning where what they've essentially done is Daniel O'Brien is, and then checks notes, single. According to our searches, he's single. Oh,
and
man.
They just keep going.
Yeah, they really want people to know that you don't have anybody in your life.
Yeah. The most curious aspect of it for me, apart from the fact that I'm on this website at all, is they have confirmed that I've had at least one relationship.
Well, I think they just assume, right? That's probably true of everybody. I'm trying to think of who else is like famously single, and I'm going to go look at them and see if it also says the same stuff. Like Ken Jeong. Like, is he married?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm there now. Have you tried to use this site to search at all? Because I can't find it's really.
I haven't. I only found it because
somebody pointed out.
Often in a writer's room, you Google around to troll and embarrass your coworkers, and this.
I found your page, by the way.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I mean, I mostly filled you in, but if you still got questions, they call me single and never engaged like 9 more times. If you're curious.
Zodiac seems to be very important.
Yeah.
On this site.
My zodiac animal is tiger. I love it. Like you get the entire thing where they just call me single an unrelenting amount of times. And then the very last line is, he attended Rutgers University and began writing for crack.com in 2007. It's like, all right. Some real information. Good journalism.
There you go.
But that's enough about how publicly single I am, I guess. Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Break up the routine of a day spent indoors. Explore workshops, classes, and more in topics like illustration or photography. Get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. Before we get into the show, actually, we are at day 100 and something of the quarantine here in New York. We opened up phase 2 just a few days ago as of the recording of this. I'm still not really changing much about what I do with my life. But Soren, do you have any quarantine COVID civil unrest updates?
I do. I recently was featured in the New York Times. Well, not featured, but I'm in a story in the New York Times about people still using the postal service, especially now in the times of COVID, where a woman asked me questions about how I was using the postal service. And I talked about my son and how his grandmother sends him riddles in the mail. And then the next day the riddle answer comes, and how he sends letters to his best friend from school.
How did the New York Times know to reach out to you?
I think maybe I had tweeted about the postal service, and the woman who was writing the article followed me. I was like, hey, I'm writing an art story about this.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Did you tweet that? I didn't see it or anything.
No, I haven't said anything about it except here.
Oh, okay. Well, it's very fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm in your backyard, Dan.
Yeah. You're in the kudos on getting some real estate on the failing New York Times. That's real cool. should we get into the show? Do you have any questions for me?
Yes. Okay. You at the beginning of the show said that you thought that a stranger had yelled at you recently.
Yeah.
So I had an experience recently where I was, I ride my bike and I have like a carrier in the back that my son rides in. And I was riding past a man yelling at a kid who was on his bike and eating a corn cob. And I was like, man, that guy is furious at his son. I wonder what his son did. And he's just like, yell at the entrance to this park. He's just yelling at him, yelling. And the kid's just eating his corn and listening to him. And then the guy got in his car and drove away. And I was like, I don't think that man knows that kid. And so I think that this something had happened. Maybe the kid had like cut him off or something, or rode his bike in front of him, but just came out, got out of his car, and then just started berating this child. And I was like, that's fucking wild. And then decided he was done and left.
Yeah.
But it made me think back to the times that I had been yelled at. And I was wondering, Dan, can you remember the time that you were yelled at the worst and it wasn't by your parents?
I'll need some time to think about that. I have a quick one that I can say real quick just to address the thing I said at the top of the episode, was that I was walking down the street. I was just like on a walk. I was wearing my mask. I was crossing at a proper time to cross the street, and had my headphones in, so I couldn't hear everything clearly. And there was a woman in a car yelling something out her window, and I just looked and then like continued about my business. It looked like she was looking at me, and I know that there were a number of possibilities. She could have been yelling something nice. She could have been like, good on you for wearing a mask, or I'm attracted to your body. She could have been on the phone in her car. She could have been singing along to something. She could have been doing like voices and like sketches, talking to herself in her car like I used to do when I drove. Or she could have been saying something mean about me. And because of the way that my brain works, none of the first few possibilities had ever entered my mind. It was just, this is a person, I know I'm not doing something wrong, but she's yelling at me and she's right, and I'm going to spend the rest of the day not knowing what she said, but certain it was bad. And then I was sad about myself.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think your natural reaction is always when anytime I see people like laughing with like some inside joke in the street, I'm like, what the fuck? What is it about me? Fuck, do I look funny? I'm always going to assume it's about me. It's just like I don't even think it's a narcissism thing. I think that's just a human thing. Yeah. Could you remember anything that she had said?
No, because I couldn't hear. I just heard like the distinctive sound of a voice yelling. And I'm crossing the street at this point. So I just turn around and I see a woman with her window down, looking what looks like to be in my direction. And I face back in the direction of where I'm going and never look back. And like the sound had stopped.
Huh.
Again, it's entirely possible.
Nothing to do with you at all.
That had nothing to do with me. But I'll go to my grave knowing that I upset this woman in some way and have no way of knowing how to atone for it.
Maybe this guy that was upset with this child, it was upset that this child was eating corn on his bike. Because generally you don't do that.
I mean, like... Generally, I don't eat corn on bikes, but I don't know that it like does one generally not do that? Is that a rule?
I'm just thinking about how weird it was even to see someone in public eating corn. It's like not a food you eat in public.
It certainly wouldn't push me to anger if someone was
hey,
on a, if a child
where
was
did
on a
you
bike
get that corn cob?
Be like, hey, corn is an indoor snack. You're supposed to be stationary when you eat corn.
I have been some places where they sell it out of carts and they put mayonnaise on it and chili, but I don't see any of those around here. It was a really weird experience, but the kid also didn't seem super bothered either. That's what made me think that it was a dad and his son. It was like, oh, this happens a lot.
Right, because at that point the kid is like, oh, he's doing one of his corn rants. Right.
I don't even remember.
He'll tucker himself out and then we'll be
this
fine.
This is the same situation where I didn't get to hear the content of the vitriol, but... It just at the time seemed very much like these two knew each other, and then the man got in a car and drove off. I was yelled at in my adult life really badly for, I would say, probably about 12 minutes of someone solidly yelling at me on a metro train. I used to ride my bike to work when we worked at Cracked, and what that means is I would ride my bike to the metro and then the metro would take me to work. But it was like a 2-mile ride. And on the way home, it was always awful because it's at rush hour and everybody's trying to get on the train and you feel like such a dick because you've got a bike and you're in everybody's way. You're taking up space on the train and you're just as apologetic as you can be. Every single time. There's nobody who rides a bike and is on the train like, look out for my bike, look out for my bike.
Right. You always like, I also hate
Nobody's happy about this. I'm so sorry, but I have to do it. I'm not going to then walk another 2 miles. Anyway, I figured out eventually, oh, I could just skateboard those 2 miles. It's like, it's not that much more exercise. No, it doesn't exert me anymore where I'm sweating buckets when I get to work. And when I figured that out, I was pumped because then it was so much easier to carry a skateboard on the train. So almost the first or second day that I did it, I got on the train, going home, feeling good about myself, and a guy gets on with his bike and this woman just starts yelling at him. She's like, no, there's not enough room. Get off. And he's like, put his bike up where he's got the back tire just on the ground and the rest of it's up in the air. So he's making as much room as he can. And it's like just this dude in a polo from wherever he works with the emblem on it, just trying to get home. And I'll also say some details that fill out the story but aren't necessarily important. He was didn't speak a lot of English, so when this woman was yelling at him, I'm not totally sure he was like trying to help in any way that he could, but he wasn't quite sure what she was mad about. And then she was a woman in a wheelchair.
Oh.
Yes. And so she's screaming at him. And then we get to the next, she's like, there's not enough room. Everybody's on the train. I mean, there's clearly enough room. Everybody's there. And we get to the next stop and she just holds the button, which opens the doors. And she's like, get off, get off. And she won't let the door shut until he gets off the train. And I'm like, what? I could save this day. And so I ran over, got in between them. And I was like, hey, he's just trying to get home. Like, his bike's already on. Like, let him go. And yeah. At that point, like, all that ire turned from him to me. And she was furious at me for standing up for this guy and started just like screaming at me about he doesn't belong on this train. She's mad that he's there. She's mad that I'm there in front of her. And she's like, I'm like, I'm going to stand in between the two of you. Oh, one of the things she was saying was if that bike falls on me, it could seriously hurt me. Valid complaint if it did fall.
Yeah.
And so I was like, what I'll do is I'll stand in between the two of you. If it falls, it'll fall on me. And she said, but then you will fall on me and I will sue you. And it was such a weird thing for her to say that my response was,
right,
that's fine. I'm made of money.
Oh, interesting choice.
This is
Soaring.
Also, but, you know how much I made it cracked. It was not a ton of money, but I was just like, that situation is not going to happen. So yeah, fine. If I fall on you because the bike falls on me, sue away. And I said, I'm made of money. And that she was so much madder. That just, all it did was escalate the situation. And for stops after that, she's just yelling at me and yelling and yelling, and yelling. And I look over at the guy and he's kind of appalled. Like, he's like smiling a little bit at me, like, thank you. I go to take off my backpack so that I'm not in anybody's. Oh, she's like, you're brushing up against that girl. You're brushing up against her. Cause I had a backpack on and I think there was a woman behind me and I was like, okay. So I took off my backpack and as I was taking it off, it brushed her arm and she grabbed it and screamed. And I was like, this is insane. I should not have done this. And I put the backpack down. I have the skateboard on the ground and I'm just standing there between them. And I start like looking around the train, like making eyes with other people. No one's.
Does anyone else want to join this fight? Do I have anyone's ass?
No, not only that. Not only people were like, you're on your own. People were mad at me. People were mad at me for even like, joining the fray, for getting involved in the situation. She might have been a crazy person, but you don't go, you don't knowingly like talk to a crazy person because it just makes matters worse every single time. Here's the thing. This was like an affluent lady. She was like clearly coming home from work. She's got her briefcase-ish thing there too with her laptop in it. She's dressed nicely. She's just so mad. And I made matters so much worse. And for four stops, this woman, it was like she was just, didn't even need air. They just kept coming and coming. And she'd do that thing where eventually she'd say something and it sounded very final.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'd think of something else and she'd go off again. And it would just keep happening. And I just didn't know what to do. And I had to be in that. I couldn't just like walk to another car because now I'm a human shield, I've decided. And I'm just sitting there listening to this woman yell at me. And I was like, I have not been yelled at like this in a very long time.
I would love to hear the story from her side. I'm still on your side, but I want to hear what happened when she got home and talked to her partner.
Yeah, so I saw her.
You won't believe what happened to me on the fucking metro today.
Here's what makes me feel a little better about it. I saw her again. On the way to work one day, we got to what I assume was her stop. Yeah, it was where she got on, or I guess maybe where she works. She was on the platform yelling at a woman. I was like, oh, this is who she is.
This is part of her. This is her like cool down afterward.
Right. I don't.
This is her yoga.
Yelling at a woman sitting on a bus bench who was just trying to ignore her, and kind of like rocking back and forth in her chair, like lunging at her a little bit. I was like,
That also lends a little bit of clarity to why other people on the train might have been annoyed with you. Because they've been like, what is this guy fucking new here? She does this every day. What are you doing?
Trying to be a hero? What the
fuck? She's harmless. Yeah. It's also, I want to investigate your impulse when you said, go ahead and do it, I'm made of money. Is that you trying to be funny to diffuse the situation, or was that a flex, or is that like, do you not know where that came from? Was that just like a gut, I need to say something?
I wanted...
That sounds powerful.
Yeah, I was not trying... That was not a... I was not trying to diffuse it with her. I think what I was trying to do is win over the group. And I thought that was funny.
People love blonde white guys with money. That's true. That's smart. It's a good
move. Here's the deal. That joke would have been great if that guy could have, out of my wallet, taken my bank account statement and shown it to them and been like, I mean, I'm not made of money.
Yeah. I'm only curious about that because this doesn't quite fit the getting yelled at thing, but in high school I was at a 24-hour Dunkin' Donuts with some of my friends, and an employee there wanted us to leave, not because we were being rowdy, but because like he just wanted to clean the entire floor. It was like midnight, so he had every reason to. Like, I'm sure this is a guy who, you know, every day at midnight this place is empty. I don't close it for 30 minutes, but I'd like to close it for 30 minutes just so I can clean everything. Yeah. And was just trying to communicate to us like, hey, can you go right now for 30 minutes? And for whatever reason, my buddy Joe was like, it's 24 hours. And he didn't want, you know, we're 17 years old or whatever. We don't have a lot of options for places to be. So getting kicked out of one that we thought we had a right to be at was upsetting. And Joe just wanted to make a fight of it. He's like, it's 24 hours. No. It's like, you want to clean it, that's your problem. You can clean around us. We're not done with our coffee yet. We want to stay here until we're done. And the guy was like, just go. Just go. And Joe was getting louder. No, I'm not going to go. And the guy was like, go, look, you're being crazy. And he's like, yeah, I am crazy. Fuck with me. See how crazy I can get. And then we eventually left. And I was like, and no one said anything. And Joe was like, I don't know why I said that.
It's just like this, like, doubling down you feel like you have to do in the situation where the release feels amazing. When, like, you are in a fight like that and you say something along those lines, as soon as you say it, it's like scratching a mosquito bite. You're just like, oh, that was awesome. Because you don't get to talk like that to people in your normal life.
Because we were like, Joe, if he did continue to fuck with you, what were you going to do? Like, I don't know, nothing.
Just run away? I don't know.
I think a time... I haven't really been yelled at as an adult because I live a pretty boring life, and I don't break many rules or go anywhere or do anything. I can remember being yelled at times when I thought I was too old to be yelled at by a stranger.
Yeah.
And resented it. There was, when I was working at a summer camp in college, there was like, there was one night where a bunch of, your stories are so much cooler than mine, because you like step up to be a hero, and mine, this story is about how every counselor except me went partying together and was hungover the next day at work, and the boss wanted to yell at all the staff for partying and being drunk and being hungover and being bad at their jobs. And I just had to sit in this lecture for like 15 minutes while this guy was like, don't fucking do this. Take this job seriously. And if you're going to, like, I get it. People are going to go out and get drunk. Don't fucking lie to me. Don't say that the reason that you're going to be late is because of car trouble. Don't fucking lie to me. I know what goes on here. Don't pull this shit with me. And I'm sitting here, I'm like 19 years old or whatever, but thinking like, first of all, I didn't do anything. And second of all, even if I did, I shouldn't be talked to this way. I think I'd reached a point where it's like, oh, are you going to keep yelling? Because I'm going to walk away because I can vote and drive. So like, bye. Like I shouldn't be yelled at anymore. I've reached that point where I don't feel like I'm allowed to be yelled at by someone. But also, again, the main character in this story's my virtue is that I was the sole counselor to not party.
I have another one where I get yelled at when I was in college that's also very on brand, which was I was in a play called Other Places.
Now, when you say on brand, is this another story where you are defending a person of color? out of the goodness of your heart. And putting yourself,
by the way,
in physical
another danger. Before, like, yeah, another element of that story is the woman was African American.
Okay.
So it wasn't like I was like standing up to some Karen. It was just a situation.
That's definitely like those details really complicate what my brain wanted this story to be.
Yes, she was not all. Yeah, it's a very complicated situation. Now imagine me talking to an African American woman in her wheelchair saying, "That's fine, I'm made of money." Suddenly, I'm not the good guy, right?
good God. All right, tell your other on brand story.
So there's,
see how this one goes.
There's a play called Other Places by Harold Pinter. And it's three different plays, but one of them is just epistolary. It's this kid writing letters to his parents who's like gone off to live on his own. And he's living in a weird ass house where a guy watches him take baths and stuff like that. But that's all it is. It's like him writing the letters and saying it out loud. And that's like a whole one act. And it was my first college play. And I had a teacher who was kind of like J.K. Simmons in Whiplash, where he was somebody who was famous for like getting the most out of people, but he was gonna fuck you up to do it. And he was pretty nice guy up until this one point where I was learning like two pages of dialogue a night, and 2 pages is about, that would end up being the equivalent of maybe like 4 monologues a night. And I was thinking, I am killing it, like I can't believe how much I'm memorizing, how fast I'm doing this. And we only get through about 2 pages the next day. And then one day we got past those 2 pages and I kept saying line. And he stopped and he goes, "Do you even know this?" And I said, "No." And he lost it. He went off. Like, he got up, threw his pencil at me, threw stuff on, threw his glasses down on the floor and was like, "Are you fucking kidding me? This isn't high school. You got to take this seriously." And up until that point, I thought a college play certainly was the most important thing. Looking back now, I should have been like, right, "Where do you think you fucking are? This is like 2,000 people at this school." He was like, "This isn't like Bush League. Like, what the fuck are you doing? If you've got lines, you memorize them. You memorize them the first night you get the part. There are a bunch of other people who could have this part. I would have loved to have somebody else for it." Like that kind of shit. And just kept going in a way where it was like, "Ooh, that was bad." And then it just would just keep going. And it's like questioning whether not only my integrity or my commitment to this part, but also whether I'm even right for it. Like, he's already had his misgivings about it. And like, I wasn't maybe necessarily his first choice. And
see, this is another one where I want to be on the fly, a fly on the wall when he goes home to his partner and is like, "I think I reached him today. I think I gave him the push he needs. This is going to do it." The rising star at Occidental.
So I really wanted to, in the moment, fight back because I was, you know, I felt like I was an adult at that point. I was 18 years old. And I was like, "No, fuck you. You can't talk to me like this." Didn't say any of that. And then it got so hurtful that I started to tear up. And like, it was like in a way where everyone's watching. Everyone else is in that play. All the stage director, I can't remember what they're called now. Yeah, I think it's stage director. Like, they're all, or the assistant director. That's what it is. They're all sitting around and like they're just watching me start to tear up while this man yells at me. And no one's doing anything about it. No one's saying anything. And everyone's just like, "Well, that's, you know, maybe that's just what he needs right now." and then it ended. And like, "Well, obviously we can't go on tonight. Learn your fucking lines." So I went home and just like, or back to my dorm, and I was just in tears. And I was like, "Oh God, that was the worst experience of my life." And went and, you know, was very good about learning my lines after that. Learned everything all at once and didn't go to classes so that I could learn them. And was like, I feel like probably one of my best performances was about play. but then on one of the,
it's the end of Whiplash, you're just like fucking crushing it, your dad shakes his head and walks away.
It was like, I felt like I did really well. And then on one of the nights during the performance, he came in and I think somebody in the room had asked him like, "So are you happy with the play?" And he's like, "Well, you know, it is what it is. That's what every play ends up becoming." And I think what he means is like, in the same way where you write something, you have an idea what it should be, it doesn't end up being that ever. And you're like, well, it's yeah. close enough. And I think that's what he was trying to say. But it, to me, that was so hurtful of like, well, yeah. we get what we get. I mean, this is what I signed up for, and these are the people that I've got, so this is what the product is. And
yeah, that's absolutely the natural reaction. Every time I hand in a draft, Kay asks me, how do you feel about your draft? And I'm always like, it's done.
Right.
I finished it. I handed it in on time.
I've decided not to work on it anymore.
Yeah.
Which is like the whole reason I think people are always like, why do writers procrastinate so much? How come it takes people forever to finish something? Because motherfucker, like, you'll never stop working on that product until you have to turn it in. That's why everybody does that. And that's also why people procrastinate. Because you know that if you have 2 weeks, you worked on it those full 2 weeks, that's you staying up so late every single night, working every single night, doing it. As opposed to that first week, just you putting it off, and then working the same amount of time on it.
Yeah.
Afterward. Anyway, it was startling to be yelled at like that, and the full range of emotions that I went through was like chilling. No one had made me feel that small since I was a child.
I'm trying to think. I feel like if I got yelled at now at this age and at this level of life experience, not like the person a stranger who I assumed yelled at me while I was crossing the street, because that's a separate thing. That's my constant need to be liked by everyone peeking its head.
Yeah.
I've upset this person in some way that I can't fix, and that's devastating to me. But if someone like was actually mad at me and wanted to yell at me, I feel like my reactions would either be sad or laughing a lot, because the idea of adults being so angry that they yell is very funny to me. And in a way that like maybe is emotionally detached, I don't know. It creeps into my mind a lot when you see these viral clips of like Matt Gaetz or some other politician who is wearing a suit in a hearing and being like, where the hell do you get off? How dare you, sir? How absolutely dare you? And it's like, you're an adult. What are you doing? You're wearing like trousers. What's going on? Why are you screaming like that? Stop it. Like, I don't want to take anything away from people who are passionate about real issues, but like yelling at a person feels so performative to me sometimes that I just feel like I don't have like the fight reaction that I had when I was younger. Like now I'm just like, well, look, you can be as mad at me as you want, but just like talk, be a person,
right?
Because you sound really silly now. You sound like Yosemite Sam right now.
That's,
you understand that?
I think maybe you like me, probably it might have been shamed out of you at a certain age, where like if I got really upset at my family when I was young, my dad and my brother would make me so ashamed of the fact that I had let myself get that riled up. Like, what, look at you, what are you doing? Like, and they laughing at you when you're angry. There's nothing worse, and there's no worse feeling than someone laughing at you when you're feeling passionately about something. And so after a while, I was
certainly
like,
growing up with three boys, there's, you're bound to get angry at each other, but if you're not at the exact same level of anger, one of you looks very sick.
Absolutely.
And it's always the angry one.
And so I just learned not to show anger out, like a tremendous amount of anger all at once. Like if I'm mad at somebody, you handle it in a very cool, collected way, because boy, losing your cool is very much means just that. You are not cool when you are angry.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of inspiring classes for creative and curious people. Explore new skills, deepen existing passions, and get lost in creativity. A class I recently took, Dan, was on illustration. And it was a passion of mine when I was really young. And then I just sort of like closed the door on that in my life. And I was like, I'm not particularly good at this, and gave up. But now that my son is into drawing, I've gotten back into it. And it's actually very, very helpful to have a teacher basically teach you how to teach somebody else. I'm learning all about shading. I'm learning all about when you draw a face, my instinct is always to put the eyes at the top, the nose in the middle, and the mouth at the bottom. But turns out you don't actually do that, and that's not how faces look. Like, the majority of your head is not face. The face only takes up the bottom third, and I had no idea. And it's making me feel like I'm actually an artist, and it's making my son, jury's still out. We don't know what he's going to be yet.
Where do the eyes go?
They go kind of like right below the middle. If you drew a cross section of a face, the eyes go right underneath that horizontal line. So the whole bottom half of the face, there's like, that's the whole bottom half of the head, that's where the face is.
That's like the big show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, something I didn't realize. And when you do it and you actually draw it that way, you're like, oh, yeah, this makes a lot more sense.
Feels like, I'm not trying to blame Skillshare or art, but it just seems like that's much of unused real estate, frankly.
It's why they call it a forehead.
Yeah.
At a time when so many important conversations are happening in our world, your voice is more essential than ever. Explore classes to unlock your creativity for social good. Skillshare offers creative classes designed for real life and all the circumstances that come with it. These lessons can help you stay inspired, express yourself, and introduce you to a community of millions. Skillshare offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. And I like, this is going to sound a little sappy, I genuinely feel that. When I do these classes, I'm like, when you're starting from scratch, that trajectory of how quickly you learn something, it makes you feel good again. It's like, you're not in school anymore, and you're not learning constantly. It's like this muscle that starts to atrophy. And as soon as you can start exercising it again, it feels great. Members get unlimited access to thousands of inspiring classes with hands-on projects from the community of millions. Skillshare is also incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10.
You can explore your creativity and get 2 free months of premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 whole months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. Get started and join today by heading to Skillshare.com/QQ. That's 2 free months of unlimited access to thousands of classes at Skillshare.com/QQ. I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is a weird one. Just any weird thing that you've witnessed but were not part of, just a wild random thing that you saw in your life that stuck with you. Ideally, not like something horribly traumatic.
Yeah.
Although mine kind of is.
mine's not sad trauma, but it is like, it definitely made an impact on me. Do you want me to go first here? I have one in mind.
I can go first.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. This is a thing that has stuck with me ever since I saw it. I apologize if it upsets people. It upset me at the time too. But I was walking around New Brunswick, New Jersey when I was going to Rutgers University for college, and was minding my own business, walking around. There was a dog walker who had become very familiar to me just because he always had like 6 dogs strapped to him at any given time. He was just like a professional dog walker who was walking around with way too many dogs all the time. And I just saw him a lot. I was like, hey, it's that like very distinguishable person. And I was walking around George Street, and there were a bunch of pigeons, and one of his dogs, a golden retriever, went and darted at the pigeon and bit its head off.
Whoa!
And killed the pigeon. And then the other birds flew away. And then time stopped for 3 hours. And we all just looked, and there happened to be a cop who was walking around the street at the time, and the cop turned to the dog walker and said, you can't let him do that. And it was clearly not from a place of like, according to this city ordinance, dogs can't XYZ. It was just like, this can't be the world. We're not allowed for this to happen. And I'm upset. And the dog walker was shaking his head like, I know. I'm also upset. And if I can just project onto the dog a little bit, the dog also seems just like, I'm as shocked as you guys are. This is not the outcome that I was expecting. I dove because I always dive. I never thought I'd catch it. Now that I did and I found out this is what I'm like, I'm very disappointed in myself. And I agree that this is a problem for everyone. And we all collectively were just like, let's all walk away. And whatever role we played in this, let's not do it again. And let's just all turn around and go our separate ways. And then we all did that. And it's just this very strange, chaotic moment.
Wow.
That no one expected to happen. And no one knew how to handle the aftermath of it. And we all just like collectively agreed, okay, so this is the end of Sphere, where we just decide to forget this.
Yeah. God, that poor dog. That dog must have been like, guys, this is not who I am. You gotta believe me.
Like, I thought there were safeguards in place for this.
There's a show that I watch called Alone, which I love very much. I think it's on the History mm-hmm. Channel. And it's where they really put people out in like Vancouver Island and just they have to stay out there with nothing until they say, I need to come home. And whoever stays out there longest gets money. And Vancouver Island is famous for having a lot of bears, famous for having a lot of mountain lions. There's a woman out there who, I think she was in law enforcement or something like that. She can handle herself. She's great. She's really fun to watch. She's very cool. She knows what she's doing out there. And this bear just keeps sniffing around her tent and it keeps getting like encroaching on her territory. And generally black bears will just run away from you. But this one, for whatever reason, is just like pushing her buttons. And one night it's circling around her tent and she just lays into this bear. She just starts yelling at it and like telling it all the things she's going to do to it. And then, like, that's like the bear understands. And I'm not even sure the bear is still there. Like, as soon as she started yelling, it's entirely possible that the bear just fucked off. But she's just yelling into the darkness about this violence she wants to commit. And at the end of it, she just starts crying and calls and says, I need to leave, because she did not like who she was. And she thought that that environment had brought it out of her and she didn't want to see it again. It's like, she even scared herself into being like, I don't want to be this. I feel like that's what happens when dogs actually kill an animal. They're like, okay, all right, I got to figure out what I am, because all of the domestication has made me something completely different from this.
Yeah. It's very much like, oh, I never thought this would actually happen. I thought I was just playing, and now I'm a monster. I think dog therapy is the thing for me.
Can you set that up? I would dial the number myself, but I don't have.
Listen, I have no thumbs and no money. Please. Please help me.
Do something. I need help. That's a good one. Is that recent?
No, if you were listening, I was in college. I was wandering around New Brunswick, New Jersey at Rutgers University in college.
I'm sorry, did you say like last couple of months? Because you're not supposed to be around people when you, with the COVID and everything, right?
Okay. I'm not going to yes and this bit.
Okay, so I have a thing. It requires a little bit of backstory.
The backstory is going to end up being like, so you know how when you reach 7, you start parasailing,
yeah,
right?
Well, get ready.
So we were doing that.
Fucking buckle in here, Dan. Well, when I was in college, I famously went abroad. First person in the world to do that. It was a great idea. Everyone else has been doing it since. I went to England. And when I was in England, I was on a thing called the trampoline team. And that meant that I...
I don't think you need to break it down. That's not a complicated sequence of words that you just said.
Okay, great. Moving on. I played Ultimate Frisbee while I was there. And they play indoors sometimes because it would snow. And when you play indoors, it's a huge gymnasium. And the huge gymnasium has like sections. And in one other section, they were jumping on these Olympic-sized trampolines. And I was like, how do I get into that? And like, oh, that's the trampoline team. And I was like, I'm joining. And join this trampoline team. I find out that we're going to a tournament in Dublin. And I'm like, fuck yeah. And it's to also not necessarily super pertinent, but this is me and then 11 girls on the trampoline team.
Uh-huh. And okay. Feels kind of pertinent.
And we're all going to Dublin. And I was like, this is going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Because of all the trampolining and culture, right? That's why you said it's going to be
yes,
awesome?
Yes. Well, it was also, the trampolining was only going to be for a day, but we were going to be in Dublin for 3 days. And I was like, this is going to be so fucking rad. And, very excited. Before I leave, I'm telling other people on the Ultimate Frisbee team about it. And they're like, they're making jokes, homophobic jokes about how every guy who does trampolining is gay. And they're like, just watch. Every guy you're going to meet there is going to be like all over you. Like the types of jokes you would make if you were homophobic, or like anyone who's gay is going to want me. Like that's just the way, all they think about is sex with the same sex. And there was a lot of that. I brush it off. I go to this tournament. I meet other people there. It's so much fucking fun. It's so cool. Everybody's very cool there and fun. And the other trampoliners, like the other boys all wear these unitards. I don't have one of those. I'm wearing like Umbro shorts and doing grabs and things like that. But they do these things called front summies with a full twist and things like that. Here we call it a misty flip. But these guys were so good. Like, they look like professionals in the Olympics. So we get done. Everybody goes out drinking afterwards. And we're all sitting around. We're playing poker at a table to bar. And so it's a circular table. And it has a circular booth that goes around it. And I'm playing with two other guys. Some other women are there. And we're having a great time. Everyone's laughing. And I'm like, these guys are great. Like, I would tell my Ultimate Frisbee friends, like, look, fuck you. Like, everybody there is awesome. It's very cool. I, at one point, drop my card, go to grab it from under the table, and happen to look up and see under the table that the two guys are sitting next to each other, one of them's giving the other one a hand job. Oh. In the bar, dick fully out, just giving him a hand job underneath the table. And I came back up and was so startled and embarrassed that I hadn't known what was going on before that point. Like, I felt like everyone at the table knew at that point except me, and that I should have known. And I was like trying to get out of the situation, but it's a booth scenario, so right. I can't get out. I can't go under the table now. I can't go over. And I just sit there and I'm just like, can't not be not aware of it now. I can see the shoulder moving now. I can see it all. And I'm just like dying for a way out of there. And finally I'm like, I need to pee. That's what I need to do. And they let me out. I go out of the booth. Just the idea of two people basically having sex near you is a very uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever be like free and open and not prude enough that I'm not taken aback by anything sexual happening in the wild. The time I was in New Orleans, we went to Bourbon Street once, just our first night, to like get it out of our system. And for anyone who doesn't know, Bourbon Street is like the wild street. Everywhere in New Orleans, you walk around drinking openly in the streets. Everyone's drunk all the time, and people are flashing their bits and whatnot. And just to illustrate exactly how much I can't hang, it's my first night. I'm walking around, and a woman a few yards in front of us pulled her pants down because she wanted to pee on the side of the road. And as soon as I saw that happen, I said out loud, "Oh no, a butt!" Because I was very shocked. The way that someone would be like, shark, you know? Because like, this isn't a thing I'm supposed to see this close to me normally.
Yeah, it's almost like, even when people have chosen the circumstances in which they're going to be nude in public, I'm still like, the pearl graspy part of me is still like, no, that's not for everyone. That's something intimate. That's something you share with the people you like the most. It was a really, really startling experience that I didn't think could possibly happen. I've also been in a circumstance where I've been peeing in a stall before, and I've heard people having sex in the stall over at like a bar, and been so, my first reaction, by the way, is always humiliation. I don't know why. It's like my own humiliation for having stumbled into the circumstance. Like, it's my fault that I got there.
I feel that as well.
Like, everybody else knows. Why didn't I fucking know? Yeah. I'm not supposed to be here.
Right. If I had walked into my apartment and two strangers were having sex in it, I would say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. This is so rude of me. There's Gatorade in the fridge for when you're done. And I'm again, this is on me. I'm sorry. I'll wait in the hallway.
Is that my suit? Yeah. It was a really startling, awful experience. That's all I got to say about it though.
Yeah. All right. That's good. I'm glad, like, so we're both clearly riddled with issues about public nudity and public sex, but I appreciate us both. Like, you didn't call the cops or anyone. Like, I'm like, I don't want to shame anyone who takes their butt out in New Orleans if they're happy to do that.
Right.
I do in my core feel like, oh, I'm the one who has the issue here, because like, it's an adult doing a thing they want to do on purpose, I don't feel in the right to be like mad about it.
Right. No, that is certainly not my first instinct is never anger at them.
Yeah.
It's always like, oh, I got to deal with this. This is my thing.
I didn't wake up today thinking I was going to see a butt, so now I have to, like, change the rest of my night.
I saw another thing. Do you want to... I can tell you another one really quick if you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
ain't got shit to do.
Probably, like, 20, and I was flying from Colorado to L.A. And in the air, in DIA, there were a group of kids that had been on some trip together, like high school age, and... they'd gone somewhere. I don't fucking know where. This might have been Raya for all, or whatever. What was your thing called?
Ryla.
Ryla. It might have been that. Because there's clearly like some bonding had happened between all these kids. Mm-hmm. And they were the only people in the world that mattered to them were them. Like they were loud. They were laughing and running around and kind of like running into people and stuff like that. It's just like this airport was theirs. And I was getting sort of pissed off at these kids quietly because they were being so rambunctious. and already I was an old man. And I didn't notice it at the time, but these kids had all been there together and then they were going their separate, they all had their flights home. So they weren't all flying on the same plane. They had just all been hanging out together until their flights would come and then they would peel off to go to their respective flights in other terminals. And I didn't realize at the time, but there were two kids that were clearly like in love for the first time. Mm-hmm. And they were quietly spending time these last few moments together. They had met on this trip. It looked like they liked each other a lot and just like trying to savor what they could with one another. And then one of them went to her flight and the boy was just like crying and crying. And then I watched the craziest thing. I watched two people run at each other in an airport. I watched him just get up and decide he's going to go get her. Him start running towards her coming down the conveyor belt the other direction, also in tears, and like those two meeting on a conveyor belt, holding each other as they just sort of like drift listlessly down this hallway of windows.
Oh,
and
boy.
And everyone around is just like feels it at once. It's not like, and nobody's laughing at them, nobody's embarrassed for them. Everybody who sees it is just like touching their chest like, oh my God. And of course, you know, it's high school love, so it doesn't, it's just the first time you feel that shit. It doesn't actually mean anything.
They didn't stay together.
But it's to watch it happen in real time was like everyone was right there with them. And they're like, oh my God. Oh, good for them.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it was a really great moment.
Well, I don't know how we're going to top that with anything, so we might as well just wrap the show up. I'm going to track down all the social accounts. While I'm doing that, we should... probably fill the time. So Soren, if you don't mind, you'll be doing that. We've talked a lot about you know, like the dreams of what that dog wanted, the dreams of those kids who were brave enough to share their love out loud in front of strangers. It's just seemed to have been a theme of the podcast. So I was wondering, Soren, what dreams personally have you given up on?
That's a great question. I wanted to be an actor one point in my life. When I first graduated from college, I thought that's what I was going to be. And I started going on auditions and I had a job that was not a job that was helping me build any particular skill set in my life. It was just a job that would let me leave occasionally to go try and be an actor. I would leave and go sit in traffic for 2 hours, go to a Pizza Hut audition where I pretended to be a disembodied head who went, that's delicious. And then drove 2 hours back to my job and then never heard from them again. And during this time, I had a girlfriend who was looking at everyone else around us who were clearly working their way up at careers that they liked and building skill sets. And she was too. And then here's this guy who's just working this job, just sort of like hoping to win the lottery one day, which is kind of what it feels like to be an actor. And I realized this is not going to work. And so I quit. I gave up on acting. and never went back. I mean, except, of course, when we did Cracked, and then I acted a lot.
So the question was, dreams, plural?
Gave up on my dreams to be an actor. Decided that wasn't for me.
Plural? That's
acting. Oh, that's only one.
Yeah.
Okay. Another dream was I really wanted to meet Kirby Puckett. He's a big hero of mine when I was a kid. Number 34 for the Minnesota Twins. Helped win the 1987 and 1982 World Series. And wanted to meet him so badly. Wanted to go to a Fruit League game, which was spring training, because that's where they do a lot of their signing of autographs and everything.
Wait, so did you give up on that dream, or did he just fucking die?
I gave up on it before he died. But yes, he is dead. Gave up on it before he died. But I remember lying in bed one night, my wall covered in Kirby Puckett paraphernalia, and thinking, I'm never in my life going to meet Kirby Puckett. It's just not going to happen. And I gave up. I wasn't going to try anymore. I had been saving up to like go to Florida for a Fruit League game. And I was just like, you know what? It's not in the cards. I don't ever get to meet my hero. And gave up.
Well, you could find the show at twitter.com/QQ_Soren and Dan, or you could find me at DLB_INC, or Soren at Soren_LTD, or our absent CFO, Michael, at Make Me Bacon, Please. You can find and hire our engineer, producer, editor, Gabe Harder, at GabeHarder.com. We have a Patreon that you can support if you want, but honestly, the best way to support this show is to download it and tell your friends to download it. And tell your enemies to download it.
Yeah, get them on board. Find some sort of common connection between the two of you. And don't live in hate. Live in love, man.
Live in love, yeah. And that's good. And don't be like Soren. Don't give up on your dreams.
There's so many more than that.
All right, bye.
See ya.